Welcome. I understand I'm keeping everyone between, this is the last talk between this and drinks, so. So first thing I think, you know, just to kind of set the stage, you know, today every business is really a data business, right? No longer people that work farming, it's a data business. Everything is becoming data all around. When you look at it, you look at kind of IoT and all the stuff that you've heard today, there's a lot of these industrial processes that create tremendous amounts of data. Right? Always on, always connected. You're looking at things of what happened, why something happened. Some of this may be control system data, historian data, machine data, measurement data. We've seen stuff today about phones, cars, just data everywhere. When you look at it, really to take advantage of a lot of this, you're at this convergence of the operational technology system and the information technology system. You know, traditionally the operational technology system, where you're managing assets, controlling processes, the simple data types, stuff happening in manufacturing, out of oil rigs, in cars. And then you have the information technology systems where you're trying to gather that data, analyze that data, make decisions on that data, and use it. And so it's the convergence of these two different spectrums that need to come together to really take advantage of all this IoT data. And this is often kind of like a challenge, just an example of what you face is, right, you want to collect, say, 20,000 time series data, sample that 1 hertz from control systems on critical pieces of equipment, right? You want to deliver the data in its raw format to a platform that could service both the data scientist and then BI, right? And everyone wants to do data science on data. And then the thing you have to deal with along the way, right, is sometimes this is going over a satellite or some intermittent connection. So how do you deal with those things? If you look at that intersection of OT and IT, and you look at the IoT World Forum, you'll find like this being a reference model of the different levels that they see things. Everything from the physical devices and controllers at level zero, you have connectivity, edge computing, data accumulation in the middle, data abstraction, applications that you may have on top, and then the collaboration and process, where you have people and other systems involved. So if you lay out then where these two different systems that will converge fit in the spectrum, you'll see that those operational ones are down from, you know, tier 4, where they're event-based, there's data in motion, it's real-time, right? So these sensors and everything else that you have there, and then above it, things become query-based. It's data at rest. It's not often real-time. So you've got these two worlds that are converging, and if you plot it out across the stack, it kind of lays out this way. If we then turn it and kind of put it in this direction and look at it from the collection to perhaps storing and querying, you'd have event time of when something's happening, and then the access time of when someone's using it. And we'll kind of revisit this diagram, you know, as we go through. So some of the things that need to be there for an IoT solution to really solve the whole problem is you need to be able to prioritize the data. Not all data is created equal. Some data that's coming off of a device has higher prioritization than other data. You need to deal with connectivity, whether it's a intermittent 3G connection, whether it's satellite, whether it's a rural farm somewhere, or whether it's high-speed network. Oftentimes, this data is going to be real-time. How do you make decisions in real-time? Security becomes a very important feature. Now that you have all this data moving around, how do you secure it? How do you make sure it's secure from the device all the way back? Provenance, in this case, I won't spend more time talking about this. You know, provenance understanding not just the lineage of data, but what happened to a piece of data all the way along. So understanding exactly what happened to a piece of data as it moved through a system and being able to prove what happened. And then lastly, you'd want something to be extensible.
Yeah, as you listen to different talks today, a lot of people have talked about how you can add things to the different systems, how to make things extensible, whether it's an open OS for devices that are extensible, or it's a platform to do analytics on the edge. Everything talks about being extensible. So as we start to look at Apache NiFi and how it fits into this picture, you know, I have like this simplistic view of data flows. Right? Everyone, you just kind of think of a simple way that you're acquiring data, whether it's from some device, it's going to flow back to some system, you're going to store it in some data store, and then process and analyze this data. Right? And this becomes just a simplistic view of the world. Reality is, this is not what our worlds look like. They look more like this. Yeah. Right. So everyone's seen this, right? You walk around enterprises and you see this all over the place, of data coming in from everywhere. You got data you don't even know about. You're storing it in all these different systems. And, you know, it's the proverbial thing of everything's being held together with baling wire. And this is really what the world looks like. Yeah, I think this cartoon, which is ironic, there's an XD cartoon after one of the keynotes this morning about introverts and extroverts, and talked about, you know, XD, I think, was in that word cloud. You know, of some of the reason we run into these problems and have this whole data flow issue has to deal with this, right? That you turn around, you look out, and you find 14 different standards of how to move data or how to think about data, how to do something with data. People sit down and go, it's ridiculous, we should just come up with one overarching standard. And then several months go by and now you have 15 competing standards. And you have the same thing, it just keeps proliferating. So NiFi is designed to solve that problem, and really designed to solve those problems. So it's a web-based UI that allows you to create, monitor, control data flows. You put together directed graphs of routing and transformation. It's highly configurable. Allows you to modify the data flow at runtime. So you can kind of think about it as like you're molding clay. So as opposed to you designing something and deploying it, you're really just kind of molding it as it goes and enable you to modify the flow of data as it's going. It's easily extensible. And then there's data provenance to track things through the whole system. So if we start to look into this more, there's a bunch of terminology that we need to understand that you'll hear floating around anytime you look at NiFi or talk about NiFi. The first is this notion of flow files. You know, flow file is, it's a unit of data that's moving through the system and composed of content and attributes. The easiest way to think about it is it's similar to an HTTP response. An HTTP response, you get back a header, and then you get back the data, that's the content. With a flow file, you have the attributes, that would be the same to the header, and then you have the content, which may just be some binary content. Having it like this, flow files and then NiFi in general become very data agnostic. It doesn't care what the data is. Right, it understands that this flow file is composed of attributes and some payload. But what it does understand is that users care about the data, and therefore this facility is provided to allow you to make decisions based upon that data. But as a framework, it has no knowledge or really any care in the world as to what the format of that data is. So it allows you to do some very interesting things. The next thing you'll see are called processors. And these perform work, they get access flow files. It's really anything that's going to do ingest, egress, or any transformation of data. Today, in the current version of NiFi that ships, is probably about a little over 200 processors that are out there, and it grows at a pretty fast clip. And these get to access everything from S3, MQTT, Cassandra, Redis, everything in the Hadoop stack. You could do transformations of content, a variety of different things. You then also see connections. So this would be the linkage between two processors. There's a queue that's in between them, allowing you to prioritize the data. and to take control of what's happening. And then you'll see processor groups. And this is really a logical grouping of the processors and allows you to organize them and then also to share components. If you've been exposed to flow-based programming at all or come across flow-based programming, NiFi is heavily based on a lot of those principles. This is just a quick chart of how they compare. If you see things in the flow-based programming world that deal with information packets, in NiFi, that's a flow file. In flow-based programming, there's a black box. In NiFi, that's a processor. The flow-based programming has a bounded buffer, and in NiFi, there's a connection. Then there's a scheduler. In NiFi, it's called a flow controller. And then a subnet in flow-based programming is a processor group. So if we look at this graphically, and this is just a screenshot of NiFi UI, in the top left corner, you have this generate flow file. That's a processor that you drag and drop onto the canvas. There's then a connection in between them where you see it says success, and then it goes to a route on attribute processor. And then there's a connection going out from there that says going to incoming and the name is unmatched, how many queued, and it's going to a processor group that's called process data. So that processor group may have n number of processors inside of it and may also have other process groups contained within it. So you would put it together on this canvas, laying out what your flow looks like, right? And it's really, you know, no different than a lot of the other things you've seen where there's a graph and you're building this graph, except in this case, you could hit play on the generated flow file and the data is moving. There's nothing that you're stopping deploying. This could all be happening as data is moving. Whether you're ingesting it from Twitter, from MQTT, from Kafka, you could work your way through and manipulate this flow as the data moves. You'll see that in between where we have success, there's a queue, and then there's a queue going the other way. So when you start to think about the data provenance for this, you know, and one of those items that came up as far as the things that need to be provided, you know, for operators of the flow of data, whether it's coming from a device all the way back, you want to be able to have traceability, you want to have lineage, you want to be able to have recovery and replay. You know, if you're analyzing something on a device, you want to understand what happened. If you're making decisions on a device, you want to understand what are you doing on the device. Are you manipulating data? What happened to it? Can you recover it? On the compliance side, you want to be able to have an audit trail or some remediation. Right? Depending on where some data comes from, there are some laws in the world that you can't move data from one country to another. Right? And you could use something like provenance to ensure and for auditing purposes, prove that data did not go anywhere. And here's exactly what happened to the data and here's where it went. And for businesses and mission, you may want to have, you know, some sort of value to the sources. You may want to have value to the IT investment. It also helps if you ever worked in an environment where you're moving data around an enterprise and, you know, you're collecting data somewhere, you travel through some data pipeline, it lands someplace that someone goes and queries, and then oftentimes the phone rings and someone says, hey, I can't find my data. I know we produced it. You didn't load my data. Right, and you start the search through logs trying to figure out what went wrong. This helps kind of solve that problem as well because you could see without a doubt, you picked up data from this point, you performed X, Y, and Z transformation to it, and then you landed it in a destination. So NiFi solves this problem of having lineage and provenance. And if you look at it, this is a screenshot from a different part of a flow that you could go and see. In this case, the component was this put solar content stream where data was flowing into solar. And you click on this little tree-like icon, and you would see that there was this receive event that happened. There was a send that happened. There was a drop. You see the provenance events as far as exactly what happened to it. You'd be able to view the attributes and the content as it goes through. You get the records, you get indexes this, makes them available for display. What's nice too is it's not just that you're seeing that this happened, but as data is going in and out of processors, you would see the input claims and the output claims. So you can see exactly the data that came in and exactly the data that went out. If you wanted to replay the data, you could then replay that data if there was something that was wrong. And so you have complete chain of custody of everything that happened. You could also get this data out of NiFi and send it to an external system for reporting, for auditing, for doing other things with. So if you looked at provenance and where it fits in along the continuum that we looked at earlier, you know, if you have these constrained high latency, you know, devices that are all the way on the edge, you may want to know things where the attribution of it, you know, and the origin. You may want to be able to replace something if it was wrong. Right? And then you have data flowing back, and you have this regional infrastructure, and then perhaps a core infrastructure, and you may want to understand what happens there, right? And the evolution of it. So in here, you may have lineage where it revolves around the event and the runtime of what happened. You may want to have configuration, and you want to have provenance from start to finish, all the way from the edge, all the way back. If you look at security and compliance, and NiFi originally came out of the NSA, right? So it came out of the intelligence community, was developed there almost 10 years ago, spent a lot of time being matured there, and then came into the open source world about a year and a half ago. Right? So security has always been of paramount importance. In this case, you have enterprise authorization services, you could do entitlements, you could interact with Kerberos, you could have data that's encrypted at rest, encrypted in transit, you could control all aspects of security of it. And again, if you look at where security fits in across this, all the way from the edge, right, we talked about things in earlier talks today about having an OS where you have things that are secure as it's being loaded and secure on a controller, going all the way back, that you may want to be able to interact with Kerberos, it may be Active Directory, you may want to have obfuscation that's done, you want this data secured all the way in flight. And so you're going to want to have security from one end all the way back. You know, another item of being able to handle, you know, back pressure. And one of those six items was this whole idea of like having connectivity and how do you deal with things that have an infrequent connection, or if you lose a connection, or it's 3G and you're out in the farm somewhere and you have a very low cellular connection or satellite. How do you deal with that? Right? So NiFi provides the ability to have this data buffering and allow back pressure and release. Right, so you can support buffering of all the data that's queued, ability to have back pressure, and to know that as it goes through a topology, it can keep applying back pressure all the way through to slow down the production of data. And then as that comes up, and as a consumer of data downstream can handle more data, then it's released. So if we look at this, and this is from, you know, a zoomed in snapshot from our earlier flow, we have that same generate flow file on the side, then we have route on attribute. You know, right here in this connection, you can see that there's a queue of 10,000, you know, by 10,000, in this case, is flow files, right? So the generate flow file is just generating random data. In this case, it generated 10,000 flow files. You have a red bar that's all filled up, and it's really just a visual indicator that this is at the capacity, right? By default, in the current versions of NiFi, when you make a connection between two processors, it'll default to 10,000 flow files or 1 gig in size. Right? There was a time where there was no default, and if you let generate flow file run, it just generates random data, and you'd hear your fan just spin, and you'd run something out of disk. Right? So there's a sane default, defaulted to 10,000. So you see, though, that this is running. You know, if this was interactive and we started a generate flow file, you would see that that processor is set to run, but there would be no more flow files generated. And what's happening behind the scenes is NiFi is controlling when these things execute and would understand that this has reached a capacity and it should now apply back pressure, and it will not schedule that processor to run and produce more data. For the generate flow file processor, if you were building that, you'd have no idea that this happened. Right? As someone that would be building a processor, it's completely outside of you knowing it's happening. The framework takes care of that for you. So in this case, if that was running and I had, say, stopped route on attribute because I wanted to change something to it, there was something I was fixing about it, and we stopped it and it built up this queue, as soon as you start it back up, then that queue would drain. And once that goes below that back pressure threshold, then generate flow file will start producing more data. Okay, so something that's important that you'd want to have, whether you're gathering data all the way from the edge or even just in an enterprise. You also want to have guaranteed data delivery. So NiFi guarantees data delivery from the time it's ingested until the time it's delivered somewhere. It's guaranteed not to lose data and to guarantee the delivery of that data. So if it crashes at any point in time, it guarantees there's no data loss. This is the same type of thing that you'd want this all the way out to the edge, right? How do you make sure that any sort of data that you're capturing all the way out, you do not lose, and you can now deliver it all the way back to where you're going to use it for some sort of analysis, data science, or BI. You know, I showed a moment ago the queues that was there that has this back pressure applied to it. So this also allows you to now say that not only is back pressure important, but it said I want to be able to prioritize data. Right? Perhaps I have a pacemaker that's producing data and is being captured by a device in a house. Right? And you want to understand that, you know what, if I see just a regular heartbeat every so often, that has a low priority. But if all of a sudden, for a couple of samples, I see something that's very high, then that would have higher priority and I should take different action. Right? So you want to be able to prioritize the flow of data. NiFi allows you to do this and comes with a handful of prioritizations out of the box. What it looks like is if you were to right-click on a connection, you'd see these available prioritizers being first in, first out, newest flow file first, oldest flow file first, priority attribute processor. So we talked about flow files having attributes and content. This priority attribute prioritizer is going to go off of the attributes in that flow file. So anything that's an attribute, you could look at and decide that it's this attribute that is important. And if a attribute has this value, then it would take precedence over all other flow files in that connection. So it allows you to determine, you know, what's important for your data. Is it based on time? Is it based on the data set itself? And if these don't meet your needs, then it's very easy to extend it and to build a prioritizer that does meet your needs. The other thing is it's designed for extension. So everything that we've seen, whether it's a processor that allows you to, you know, push, pull, to have custom UI, to transform data, you could extend those and build them. There's a simple Maven project, and there's a Maven artifact that you could use to generate a Maven archetype that you could use to generate a processor. There's controller services. So we didn't see one of those in the screenshots, but this allows you to basically have reusable components. So you can think about a controller service being for like a JDBC connection pool, or some other type of, you know, a high cost shared service you're gonna use, often implemented as controller services. There's reporting tasks that you could extend. So I mentioned that you could take the provenance data and get it out of NiFi. That's done with a reporting task. The prioritizers that we were just looking at, the user interface could be completely changed. If you look at the difference between the Apache NiFi interface and then Hortonworks Dataflow, which is based on NiFi, the difference in the user interface, We have to put elephants on everything. So in the top left-hand corner, there's elephants. And the bottom, it says powered by Apache NiFi. Outside of that, it's 100% the same code, except the user interface gets a slightly different skin in the corners. And the REST API, everything that you see in the UI is done by calling an API that's underneath. So oftentimes people want to use that API to control NiFi via Control-M or to do different things with it. The extensions outside of the REST API end up getting bundled into what's called NAR files, which are really just NiFi archives. They're similar to a JAR file with just a little bit of extra information. So one of the things I think is often important is, oftentimes when people start to think about or look at NiFi, it's just human nature to want to put things into a box that you know. And NiFi often gets put into either the enterprise service bus box, a processing framework like Storm or Spark, a message bus like Kafka, MQ series, or a lot of times kind of an ETL box, because you'll hear it talked about that you can do transformations of data. So just wanted to spend a couple minutes just to kind of touch on each of these to kind of give you an idea as to how to think about NiFi as it relates to those other components. So when you compare it to Spark or Storm or anything in that space, those systems are really designed for doing complex and distributed processing. NiFi, on the other hand, is really designed towards more of the simple event processing. So if you can think about something as an event by event, and NiFi works really well in that space. It doesn't understand, you know, windowing that you'd see in something like, say, Spark or Storm or Flink. Oftentimes, you'll see those systems scale out to thousands of nodes as needed, and NiFi is more comfortable in, you know, the tens of nodes and 20 of nodes. From a message bus standpoint, you know, Kafka does a fantastic job of saying, give me as much data as you can, as fast as you can. I'm going to just take it as this black box, I'm going to store it, and I'm going to serve it back as fast as I can. NiFi is really about, I can ingest data at high speed, I get egress data at high speed, but I let you control what happens to that data in between, and allow you to do this routing of data wherever it may be, whether it's on a device or in an enterprise, and route it around. And it has this interactive command and control, real-time operational visibility. So different than Kafka. It has a notion of queues that you'll see in between processors, but really designed for solving this flow problem and not just as a general message bus. When you look at some integration frameworks like Spring integration or ingestion like Flume, you know, a lot of those tools do a great job, but they're really focused towards a developer. They're really focused towards, you use this SDK, this library, and then you build things on top of it, and you orchestrate your workflow via code. NiFi is very much positioned towards the user of the data, and allowing someone to interactively control the flow of data. The first customer of it is definitely the person that would be working with that flow, not a developer that's building something from code. Right? There's tremendous facilities provided and care given towards developers being able to extend it, but it's really designed for someone that's gonna be visually looking at a flow of data in an enterprise coming from devices and being able to control that flow of data. When you look at it compared to ETL tools, things like Informatica and other tools in that space really are strongly schema dependent, right? They're designed to go against a warehouse or against a database. They want to look at tables a certain way. You're performing ETL operations on a whole table. You're doing things at that level. NiFi, on the other hand, is completely schema independent. You could have flows that are put together that are consuming, you know, data coming off of cameras, Twitter data, using OpenCV, getting data from devices, doing a whole mix of things without understanding any schema about it at all. You could have a schema if you want to, but there's nothing that enforces schema. When you look at more of like the ETL type of work and kind of the real, you know, transformation work, NiFi could do some work, and again, it's more towards the single event type of work you want to do. If you wanted to take two database tables and then join them together in NiFi and do some sort of transformation on it, NiFi is going to have a really hard time doing that. If you could do the join outside, great, but it's not going to work in the same way as something like Informatica would to allow you to take two tables and join them together and do some of columns or things of that nature. So again, some of the key features and principles behind NiFi is guaranteed data delivery, data buffering, so you have this back pressure and pressure release, allowing you to have prioritized queuing, flow-specific quality of service, so it didn't show a UI that shows up, but allowing you in each of those processors to decide whether latency is more important or throughput is more important. And it really gives the framework, you know, some sort of hints as far as how you want that to operate. Has data provenance, allows you to do recovery, recording, visual command and control, and again, designed for extension. Now, if we look at Minify, you know, this is really kind of the biggest difference between them, the two of them. Minify is a sub-project of Apache NiFi. And the genesis of that is really just this whole idea of like, you know, let me get the key parts of NiFi close to where data is being born and then provide bi-directional data transfer. Right, so where NiFi lives in the data center, it currently doesn't run on Yarn or Mesos or things like that. Oftentimes people ask why, and it's really kind of simple. NiFi started life before Yarn was a twinkle in anyone's eye. Right. There's ideas and plans, and you know, sometime probably in the next year or so, to have it run and have on one of those, on something else that does resource management, but today it doesn't. So today, its view of the world is, I'm going to live on a machine and I'm going to have full access to all computing resources, whether it's disk, network, or CPU, RAM. Minify, on the other side, is really designed to say, look, I'm going to run as an agent and as a guest on some OS, right? So, and to be as close to where the data is being born as possible. So a different view of how they're approached. But the key features, you see, are almost identical, right? Same thing of guaranteed data delivery, having data buffering, having prioritized queuing, having different quality of service, data provenance is there, having this recovery and recording. The two things that are different is NiFi, as I said, is command and control, kind of like you're molding clay. Minify is very much design and deploy. It's going to go onto some device, you're going to design what the flow looks like, and then deploy that flow to a device. And because of that, then has this notion of warm redeploys, where NiFi doesn't. So a couple of things that are slightly different for the target environments. And when you start to think about, you know, a lot of the things that you've heard today and seen of just reality of computing outside the comforts of the data center, right? There's limited computing capabilities, limited power, restricted platforms, there's no UI, something may be physically inaccessible, can't frequently update it, tons of standards and protocols, scalability a concern, and then privacy and security. And so you have all this data that's being collected on the edge, and privacy and security becomes an issue. So when you look, NiFi, Minify has taken a lot of precedence from NiFi. One of them being site-to-site protocol. So NiFi has this notion of the site-to-site protocol that's used to allow NiFi to NiFi cluster communication. Right? That is abstracted as a separate library that can then be used to allow NiFi to communicate with anything else that's using that library. Right? So having that library that's out there Minify takes advantage of site-to-site, and now you have site-to-site protocol between Minify on the edge and NiFi. So it's guaranteed delivery of data, it's secure, handles load balancing and everything else that you'd expect to see. The attributes in the flow file are completely maintained as it moves across. Precedence also for data provenance. That's just it. So NiFi always had this notion of data provenance to be able to provably show what happened to a piece of data as it moved. In Minify, that same idea exists. So now you have that happening as well. So now you have things all the way out on the edge where you have the notion of what happened to something. Created it, you received it, you may have fetched it, you sent it, you downloaded it, different things that could happen to it. So again, this is capturing all those attributes in the metadata of what happened. And so now when you get data that comes back from a device on the edge that you're collecting and it flows all the way back, you now see the data provenance of everything that happened on the edge, everything that happened in the data center, and you can see the entire journey of that piece of data and everything that occurred along the way. And a similar thing, right? So this is just an example of provenance, of just the provenance event. And you see the same thing. This data was received, the attributes may have been modified, content was modified, and then eventually it was dropped. And in this case, it's just this listen HTTP component. But the same type of functionality that you'd see in NiFi existing on the edge of Minify. But some things have to change, right? It's slightly different when you're putting code that's all the way out there on the edge somewhere and not local. Right. NiFi has an embedded web server, it uses JET and has a UI. In Minify, you don't have that, right? So the feedback loop is slightly longer. You're not actively looking at something that's running. You need to have declarative configuration. So I mentioned the list of the features of having this design and deploy and this warm reload. NiFi doesn't have that. Minify, you design the flow in NiFi, and then you move what represents a template that's a YAML file to Minify. And that ends up being the configuration that's used. And then to reduce the footprint, the set of bundled components is smaller. So when you look at the scoping of Minify, it started out where there was a Java version of it, and this enabled a quick incarnation of Minify to say we could take what was in NiFi, strip out some of the framework, strip out everything related to UI, and now you have a smaller footprint that run the JVM with all the same functionality. Then you get feature parity in the Java. Then decide to go smaller, and now there's an initiative, there's a Minify that's in C++. And then going smallest, there's work going on to have it run on Android, iOS, and particular processors, and to just keep making it smaller and smaller. All of this still using the same flow file format, site-to-site protocol, provenance. So even as it continues to get smaller footprint, as it targets smaller and smaller devices, core features stay the same. As you go from Java down today, there's fewer processors that are available. In the Minify Java that's out on the Apache site, you could have feature parity from the processors that you'd have with NiFi. In the C++ version, there's a handful of processors that are there, and it's really kind of been undertaken as people start to have needs, as people have use cases for it, then processors are being developed. But the C++ is a ground up, you know, fresh write of everything. The Java one got to leverage a lot of existing code that was there. So you look at it, you know, I think this kind of, you know, paints it where it's like, you know, a NiFi for ants, where it's just getting tinier and tinier wherever this can get put. So if we go back to this diagram and you start to lay out what this looks like when you have, like, say, MinFi and NiFi, you know, you have these constrained devices all the way at the edge, and then you got things that are kind of like cloud on-prem, low latency, you know, up in the core. You have these different sources of data. You may have some regional infrastructure. You have this core infrastructure. You got context and commands that are going in, you know, down and could be coming back. You got data that could be moving in both directions. You have NiFi and the core infrastructure, and you can have NiFi at the edge, and then MinFi as well. It's common sometimes that people run NiFi on Raspberry Pis. More often than not, now I think you'd put MinFi, not NiFi. As time goes on, it gets harder and harder to consider a Raspberry Pi a device when it gets more and more powerful and becomes closer to a laptop. But you end up with some continuum. And really where that continuum is of when you switch from, say, NiFi to MinFi really kind of depends on the use case. You know, that middle area of kind of regional infrastructure, it gets kind of fuzzy as to what makes sense. So if we look at some places in an IoT space where you start to see NiFi and MinFi used, you've seen stuff of it being used for a connected car. Through Hortonworks, we've done work with some of the car manufacturers and done some stuff with it on cars. And so you see it kind of working in this way of having MinFi there and running on a car. So you see it running on the telematics layer and collecting data on the vehicle. This just shows a deeper view as to what that looks like of sitting there with a CAN bus, listening for information, making routing decisions, prioritization decisions, filtering data, and taking other actions as well. I don't have this video hooked up. It's longer than what we'd have time to watch here, but if you search for this Alliance that went on, this open source in-vehicle infotainment. The video that's there shows a walkthrough of some folks that put together a NiFi flow and MinFi, and based upon where the car was located and the GPS of it and the weather, they're opening and closing the sunroof. Right? And making those decisions in NiFi is, you know, MinFi of this is the weather, close the sunroof because it's going to rain, or it's sunny, open the sunroof and kind of go back and forth. So it kind of shows, you know, what you can start to do with this. Some other stuff we looked at, and I've worked with some, you know, customers in the fast food world. They probably prefer to be called like quick and elegant, but they wanted to have, you know, capture data from POS systems. And looking across like 4,000 chains in the US and say, we want to understand the data that's being generated on these POS systems so we could do real-time pricing, we could understand real-time inventory, we can understand and do predictive help desk. The predictive help desk was something that was pretty important to them. When you see what goes on and you look at some of these cash registers, for me it was pretty enlightening to realize that a POS system that someone's using, that was NEC, the software that they're using, the logging and what was logged all depended on who wrote the code behind the button. No one used Log4j, Log4c++, nothing like that. It was all these different logging formats, like 20 different types of log formats being generated just to place an order. And so for them, they were very interested in understanding, can we run MinFi? Can we then transform this log format into something standard, push it up to NiFi running in Azure, and then understand when a cash register is having problems and not have to wait for someone in the store to call and say, we don't know what's going on, and then go through that whole troubleshooting exercise. So in this case, they wanted to be able to do predictive help desk, and they also wanted to be able to understand real-time sales and inventory. Some other cases I've seen work going on of NiFi on security cameras, putting it on ships. I've talked with folks that are down in this part of the world that a lot of cruises go from, but when you get on a cruise ship, you're pretty much captive. and they have a lot of information about you. So to be able to understand what your behavior is, be able to understand and control what's being watched, and to do different things on set-top boxes and a variety of things. When you look at the ecosystem of this, and in particular of when you go into, you know, the IoT area and with Minify, you know, site to site is great that you could have this machine-to-machine communication. Data's arriving into NiFi, no different than it's coming from somewhere else. You got this reduced footprint, so you could have NiFi functionality all the way at the edge. But there's things that end up being problematic that are being worked on. And so you mentioned that Minify was design and deploy. Well, now you're going to design and deploy this across thousands of agents. You end up with a problem of how do you do command and control? How do you control these agents in the field? And so there's work going on, and you can see design documents and documentation up on the Apache Wiki for it of how do you control Minify on the edge? How do you do command and control for it? How do you map the UI? What does a UI look like if you have 4,000 nodes that are out there? Some other work that's going on deals with the configuration management and evolving of these things. Extension repositories of how do you have things that are out there so that it's not in the footprint. If you've used Spark before and Spark packages, it's nice that you can just be able to include a package from the Spark packages site without having to have it bundled. That's similar type of thing. And then how to have things like a variable registry. So I think if you ask why NiFi and Minify, you know, especially in the context of IoT, I mean, I think it's pretty simple, right? That moving data is multifaceted challenges. It's hard to get right. You want to be able to provide common tooling and extensions across it all. I really empower the folks that are managing infrastructure to make changes and reason about data and not have to write the code. So if we go back and look at this IoT forum reference model, you can kind of see where Minify and NiFi fit into here. You know, all at the edge, you have Minify that could be embedded in devices. At the connectivity, you got this data source agnostic, secure and guaranteed bi-directional delivery of data, having the buffering that's there as well. At that level three, that edge computing, you have prioritization of data, common command and control, some simple event processing, and then up at the data accumulation, you have things like provenance that permeate all the way up. The abstraction application and so forth, that just continues up the stack, which is outside of where you typically would see NiFi being used. Ends up in something like Hadoop, Spark, whatever it may be that you interact with. So interested, join the community. There's a typical links you'd expect to see. Mailing list is very active. Project's extremely active and vibrant. I appreciate your time. Sure.
Real quick, on the prioritization of the queues on NiFi, one of the things we've always had trouble with is the overhead maintenance of it. It requires a data engineer, it's not a BI person, it's whatever. Have you guys come to a point where you can cascade across all of your processes you defined within, say, 15, 20 different NiFi flows? Otherwise, we go through each one by hand, change everything. It's an administration, like, issue for us.
Right. So repeat your question. So the question was, is there any good solution for prioritizing flows and queues across entire flow and not connection by connection by connection?
Right, or process.
Or process by process. At this time, no, just because they operate differently, and I don't think there's a common way or being thought to how do you communicate that data all the way through, and then how does that work? It'd be interesting to see in some cases where it's common, but I haven't seen any work that's gone on or thoughts about how to solve that.
Okay, and my other question is on Minify. You know, you guys are talking about critical infrastructure and devices and things like that. I mean, what's the realistic time frame when you'll see this, like on an aircraft or, you know, some mission critical type of the accreditation process? So we're talking years, we're talking months.
So the question was, how soon before Minify would be on more mission critical hardware and kind of things that are more sensitive? I think it's really just adoption and what it is. If those things are need native code, then it's going to be like the C++ agent or something. That's much younger. I mean, if you watch the mailing list, you know, Minify 0.2.0 is being voted on, right? So it's pretty young in its life cycle. If those things could tolerate a JVM, it's much further along, and Minify Java is very solid and has a lot of the core underpinnings that NiFi has. So that code base is very solid, and it's just really a matter of use case and someone needing it. The C++ one, I would think just from maturity of that code base, it may take a little while before it's there. Through the work that I've been involved in at Hortonworks, we see more and more customers that are wanting to put it on more interesting pieces of hardware. Before something embedded that has, you know, life at risk, I'm not quite sure when someone has the tolerance for that. I think there's hurdles to go through before you get there.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. I think you had a question, Beth.
So with flow files, there's the payload, mm-hmm. which in the early examples were looking like, you know, hundreds of bytes, kilobytes, mm-hmm. and then there's collateral provenance data and all that goes around it. Where do you find the sweet spot in terms of the, 500 byte payload versus a 500 megabyte payload? There's a very big difference in terms of what that system is going to be able to process effectively. Right. Where do you find the sweet spot in terms of payload size that really seems to make the system flow well?
Okay, so the question was, if I capture it correctly, of where's that sweet spot and payload size to make a system hum correctly? It really depends on what you're doing. You see people that use NiFi to ingest files that are tens of gigabytes in size. And NiFi does a really good job of trying to, if all possible, to just basically pass by reference. So even though you see those flow files in the connection, by default, unless you intentionally tell it to do otherwise, as the data moves across and the flow files move across, it's the attributes that are in the bytes or kilobytes in size that are moving with a pointer to where the content lives on disk. And the content's not moved. If you do things like, say, you want to compress it or uncompress it or hash the content, it has no choice but to rewrite content. But if all possible, it's just going to move the attributes and then have pointers to where the content lives. And when the content is written, it's shredded across different repositories on disk into pieces as well. So then you get kind of parallel reading and writing of it. But it does, there's a lot of attention paid to not rewriting content if not possible. Once it moves across to something else, you have no choice, obviously, but within a node that's running, it does a really good job of trying to understand not to move content. So, and then from there, it really just depends on the specs on a machine where you're doing like OpenCV and doing facial recognition compared to one where you're just doing like light processing of JSON data. It just kind of, you know, people end up with different specs of hardware. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
On the point of like this embedded hardware, people do often have some kind of dev system, some test system, or some plot system to develop such a flow. Do you follow the same pattern with NiFi, or is like a typical installation one single installation when people develop a NiFi workflow in prod only?
So the question I have to deal with, like, the DevOps type of thing and moving NiFi between like Dev, QA, Prod. When NiFi originally was created, there was one environment. It was production, and there was production. And which is just crazy to think about when you talk to people that worked on the team at the NSA, like, yeah, it was just everything was done in production, just stop something and reroute traffic for the NSA. When it came into the, you know, more commercial world, a lot of people were like, that's absolutely not how we work. There is no way some developers touch in a production environment. The story was not very good at the time. It's gotten much better, and I think the people involved and a lot of people working on it have heard loud and clear. And if you look just on the Apache side of just like where it's going and kind of like the CI and development and DevOps of it, there's best practices you could follow now of how to move things between, you know, different environments, dev, QA, and so forth. In one of the slides I talked, there was a mention of like registries and having like this template registry and flow file registry. Some of that work, and you can see it start to take shape in NiFi 1.2 that recently was GA'd, where you'll see now versions for processors. Some of that registry work will start to take shape where if you're in dev, you can then check in and check out a template or a processor group, and then you'll start to be able to have things like, I approve that this can move into this next tier of deployment and allow that to start to happen. So that type of workflow of having it take place, you'll see a lot of stuff on the Apache site that's designs for how that will take shape. But there's the best practice way to do it today. It's not perfect, but it's definitely a lot of work going towards maturing that and having that work there. Good. Yeah, all right. Well, I won't stand any longer between you and drinks. Thanks for your time.